Hey, it's Aaron Hogan, Genesis Driver, encouraging you to experience the difference between ordinary and extraordinary by discovering the Genesis GV70. That Genesis of Round Rock, bold design, advanced technology, and refined power redefines what modern luxury should feel like. And this month, you can enjoy low APR financing. How about 1.99% APR for up to 48 months on select 2026 Genesis GV70 models? Go see them at Genesis of Round Rock, 2201 North May Street, or explore your options online at genesisofroundrock.com. Luxury never looks so good. Welcome to Genesis.
From the 102.7 ESPN studios in Austin, Texas, this is the Jeff and Ed Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. I'm Ed Clements, along with Kyle Owen. Jeff is going to be back on Monday. We've been talking about the Texas Tech. Big money now at Tech again, as if they didn't have it. Tech now will receive $75 million, a 15-year naming rights deal to AT&T Jones Stadium. It's been Jones Stadium a long, long time, but now it's going to be Galaxy Stadium, along with a Monster energy drink, Big 12. So that 15-year, $75 million straight to the athletic department and Galaxy, which is a big, big, big conglomerate, will give opportunities to Texas Tech athletes for NIL deals, which is phenomenal. We talked earlier this week, Kyle Owen, about the situation if the Auburn-Baylor game, the game the first week in September in Atlanta, where Auburn's going to get a ton of money, and they'll distribute that to 24 players for NIL, something like $250,000 per player.
Yeah, it's up to 24 players, and if it is 24 players, then it'll be $250,000. If it's less than, then they get more than $250,000, which is, for one game, not too bad.
That's not too
more
bad
than
at
an
all.
NFL check, I think, for a week.
probably so, and the players will do pre-game interviews. They'll do things to
promote social media activation.
Social media,
yeah.
Things like that. And we thought, well, what about it could be a venue for Texas and Oklahoma to do that. Texas OU, they don't need to sell any tickets there. And I think the interest is quite frankly already there. What else could they do?
Social media. To get whoever sponsors the game can get brand awareness via the game.
Right. Speaking of the SEC, you had the list of the SEC preseason all-conference team. They do this every year. I know they do this. They did a couple weeks ago with the Big 12. But the SEC preseason poll is out, and it is raising a few eyebrows. Tell us about some of the highlights to you. First of all, let's start with the quarterbacks.
So I mentioned to you this earlier off air. There's no Arch Manning on the first or second team quarterbacks. First team quarterback, who would you think it is?
First-team quarterback in the SEC, I would think it would be, if it's not Arch, probably the Ole Miss quarterback.
Yeah, Trinidad Chambliss.
Trinidad Chambliss, who ended the year so beautifully for Ole Miss. He's coming back for his 18th year, or his 9th year, whatever.
Something crazy.
But Trinidad Chambliss is the preseason
first team.
Okay, who's second team if it's not Arch?
So that is a very interesting question. I mean, because you can think of, you know, John Mateer.
Yes.
You think of Gunnar Stockton.
Oh, my gosh. I forgot totally about Gunnar Stockton. Let me amend mine. I'd put Gunnar Stockton number one.
Yeah.
And if it's not Arch, I would put number two.
I like Trinidad. He's obviously proved himself getting to the semifinals of the college football playoffs. Obviously, he didn't beat Georgia last year. Gunnar Stockton probably had the better team behind him.
Yeah.
I think Trinidad Chambliss is the best quarterback ceiling-wise in the league, but Gunnar Stockton has the best team behind him. I will agree with that.
Yeah.
So, it is interesting. And then you think about Sam Leavitt at LSU, right?
Sam Leavitt is, the thing about Sam Leavitt to me, and I know Jeff is really high on him. I know a lot of people are high on him, and he was a wonderful quarterback at Arizona State 2 years ago before he got injured. I wonder if he can be able to come back from the injury, but he's not number two.
No, he's not number two. And I mean,
so it's not Mateer's not number two.
Alabama quarterback's not number two. Right,
I don't know
now.
The Alabama quarterback.
They have a I guess, a duel going on right now between Keon Russell and Austin Mack. It's probably going to be Keon Russell. He's a sophomore. So that'll be interesting for Alabama. So going down the list, I mean, not John Mateer, not Sam Levitt.
We are the Aggies. The Aggies are
there
we.
There you go. Marcel Reed, second team, all SEC.
Wow.
Preseason. He is the most experienced quarterback in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
I think him and him, Arch, and Gunnar Stockton, I think all three have the most SEC starts from top to bottom. So Marcel Reed last year, I mean, obviously he showed his glimpses of glory and literally the last three games
the
of the year.
The last three games of the year, yeah.
So four games, because it was South Carolina, then Samford, and then Texas and Miami. So, yeah. But yeah, it's very interesting that Marcel would be up there. I mean, he definitely has the potential to be that second team quarterback, but that's if he does improve drastically from what he did last year. Because I mean, like I said, the first part of the year he was lights out, and just at the end the pressure got to him. It seems like so.
Was it pressure? Was it fatigue?
I don't know. It seems like maybe a little bit of both. Maybe he got too high off of the LSU win whenever they ran LSU out the building in Tiger Stadium. It was weird. I mean, that South Carolina game, man. I don't even want to talk about the first half, but the fact that they were able to come back showed some promise.
Right.
And then obviously you had Samford in between then and Texas, and then going to the Texas game, I was confident. I was very confident going into the Texas game, and it didn't pan out that way. It felt like Texas' defense was able to kind of shut them down and make them one-dimensional, which is what most teams weren't able to do.
See, I forgot about Gunnar Stockton. I would not put Marcel above Arch the way the season ended.
Correct.
For that reason. But I guess, and who did this? What was this, media members who
it's
did
the, it? The Athletic.
The Athletic did this. Okay, a bunch of New York guys, but they're really good. Sam Conn and those guys for football. Looking at the Aggie schedule, I don't like the Aggie schedule next year because you get a gimme against Missouri State week one. September 12th, you have Arizona State. Arizona State's not the same without Sam Levitt, healthy or not healthy. Yeah. Then the Aggies, September 19th, get Kentucky at Kyle Field. That should be a win. Mm. The new Kentucky team. Then is September 26th at LSU. That is going to be a difficult, difficult, difficult game for the Aggies on the road at LSU.
Yeah, it's interesting because Arkansas got screwed going back-to-back in Austin.
Right.
We got screwed.
By going to
LSU back-to-back. Last year, we ran away with it. This year, this LSU team has a new life, a new invigoration.
Yes, new, more money.
Yeah.
And more money, too.
And so, and Saturdays at Death Valley are never easy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, take advantage of what you had last year. But this year, against Lane Kiffin, you said it's week four?
Yeah, September 26th.
So hopefully...
Same Saturday, opens SEC play. Texas plays at Tennessee that day.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, which is... That's interesting, because usually, I mean, before Texas came back into the picture, that was the Thanksgiving weekend. So this is the first time in, 10 years... or 13 years mm-hmm. since A&M has played LSU not in mm-hmm. late November.
Right.
Even last year they played in late November. So I don't know if it'll be any different being in September. I do remember, going to some of those games in Death Valley during Thanksgiving weekend, and it was a little absent of students, which made it a little calmer of an environment. So I'm interested to see how things will look in a mid-September, fresh off the summer break, and in Death Valley.
October 3rd, the Aggies host Arkansas. Arkansas ain't Arkansas anymore.
I mean...
Not Arkansas at all, in any way, stretch, or form. October 10th, the day the Longhorns and Aggies... The Longhorns play OU October 10th, and the Aggies have to go to Columbia to play Missouri. That is a dangerous game to me.
We got a back-to-back in Missouri, too, then, because we played Missouri at Missouri last year.
Right. Very, very dangerous.
Which is interesting. So Elko has had Drinkwitz's number, since Elko's gone back into the league.
Mm-hmm.
He's been able, Missouri, it felt like Missouri had been on such a good track until they faced A&M back-to-back years.
Yeah,
and so it'll be interesting to see if Elko can keep up that trend.
And Missouri can be hully-gully, too. They can be up or they can be down.
Well, they're a Midwest team. They're a very just grind-you-out type of team.
Right.
But if you can make big plays on them, game's over.
October 17th, I don't know how this happens, but the Aggies and your team host the Citadel. Gimme game. It's a gimme game. But then the next week is ain't no gimme game. October 24th. At Tuscaloosa against Alabama.
Yep.
Difficult, 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 difficult.
It's been 14 years since they beat Alabama and Tuscaloosa. So, with Johnny Manziel
since Johnny
back
Manziel.
Then, yeah, 2012.
Then you get the week off, and then you play at South Carolina. Shane Beamer's a desperate man. South Carolina played well last year for three quarters, and then Aggies ferociously came back.
Yeah, that's an interesting game because A&M and South Carolina got a pseudo rivalry whenever they entered the SEC.
Right,
they were the SEC East team that A&M got paired up with to play every single year. A&M historically has dominated that series, but they see each other every year. So Beamer obviously has some sort of, you know. Elko was a defensive coordinator there before he got there, so he has tape, and he obviously knows how to expose it a little bit via that first half.
So the final games, regular season games for the Aggs, November 14th, home against Tennessee. Who knows how Tennessee will be at that time?
Yeah,
I think Tennessee-Texas is going to be a terrific game.
Mm-hmm.
But Tennessee and A&M should be terrific.
The last time they came to College Station, it went to overtime.
Yeah. Then November 21st, it's an early game. At OU. Difficult, that's difficult, difficult.
Dangerous one. OU's defense is going to be good, just as they were last year.
And Mateer's got to be better.
Got to be better.
That's on November 21st and November 27th, the Friday night. Aggies host the Longhorns.
Yep.
Can the monkey get off Marcel Reed and the Aggies back?
Of course I hope so.
But I don't.
We'll
I'm
see.
Sorry, I don't.
Well, yeah.
I don't.
Of
I don't,
course.
I don't
we disagree
care.
There.
We disagree there. But that's the Aggies have a tough schedule with LSU, at LSU, at Missouri, at Bama, at OU.
Yeah.
And then you mix in Texas and Tennessee at home.
That's A&M has a tough schedule. It's a lot different than the A&M schedule last year, that's for sure. So if they were to go undefeated up until that Texas game this year, it's a hell of a lot different than them going up undefeated up against Texas like they did last year.
Yeah. Is it playoff or bust for this Aggie team, I would have said.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I think so. Elko has said it himself. The playoffs is what measures a coach these days. And if you don't make it, there's going to be questions.
Speaking of the Aggies, there's a certain coach who's a wealthy dude, $75 million from the Aggies by the name of Jimbo Fisher.
Florida State made him too.
Who was fired a few years ago or walked out, whatever, left. But he got $75 million in the bank account. Jimbo Fisher, there's a story today, Kyle, that says he wants to get back into coaching. He doesn't care if it's an offensive coordinator. He wants back in coaching. Is there room at a Power Four school with Jimbo Fisher? Let me jump in first. I don't think so. I think Jimbo Fisher, who had a really great career at Florida State, not so great at A&M, I think he's yesterday's news.
So, yes. Yesterday's news as in a head coach, correct?
Yes.
He is actually saying in the story that he would like to be a coordinator.
Yeah.
Not just a head coach. And it is very interesting because he says, the quote in the story that gets to me is, I was able to recruit without money, and now I can, and so what do you think I can do with money? And well,
recruit without money? What is he talking about?
When he was at Texas A&M, he had the number one recruiting class. Mm-hmm. What did he do with it? Absolutely nothing. He went 8-5. So even though you can recruit, doesn't mean you can coach a team. So he was able to get the number one recruiting class in the country at A&M, turned it into an 8-5 season.
Yeah.
As a head coach, that is. I don't know, you know, I guess he's an offensive guy. Maybe as an offensive coordinator, if he's able to, you know, kind of recruit but he's so lackadaisical. And I think lackadaisicalness in this era of college football can only get you so far because you have to have some strenuous type of rules to be able to hold in these guys that are just money, money, money hungry.
Yeah.
So
I don't think I would want him to be an offensive coordinator on my staff because, listen, he's going to be looking over your shoulder. It's hard to just be an offensive coordinator after you've been a head coach at Florida State.
National championship winning home coach.
It's hard to do that. It's almost impossible because you got to believe if there's any kind of a crack in the program, he's going to try to get that head coaching
job. Because it's not like Will Muschamp where he realized his place after Florida. He was like, you know what? I think I'll just stick to defense. Whereas Jimbo was like, nah, I'm the best.
Yeah.
And they ran him out of College Station, and now he's been stuck doing nothing. So, whereas Will Muschamp has been working at his defensive craft ever since Florida.
Right.
So there's some
coaches, too, who are assistant coaches and not make great head coaches.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, Will had a tough time at his stops.
Mm-hmm.
David McWilliams, my friend, had a tough time at Texas. He was a marvelous defense coordinator, had a tough time as a head coach. So I don't know. There's some. I wouldn't trust Jimbo Fisher. I don't know. You know, they're looking over the shoulder. Speaking of assistant coaches, we heard today and saw the story from Kurt Bowles in the Houston Chronicle. Leon Fuller died at 87. You know who Leon Fuller is?
No, I do not.
Leon Fuller was a longtime defensive coordinator for the Longhorns. Fred Akers, defensive coordinator, 77 to 81. He was also Makovic's defense coordinator, 89-93. He's former head coach at Colorado State for 7 years. A wonderful defensive coordinator. Man, this guy was a great defensive coordinator. He had the really he was a great, great person to be around because he was easy to do an interview with and would talk and just a real down-home guy. Guess who his high school football coach was, Kyle? High school football. He grew up in Nederland. High school football coach was Bum Phillips. His high school coach was Bum Phillips.
Wow.
Guess who his college football coach was at Alabama?
Bear Bryant.
Bear Bryant. Is that not incredible?
Yeah.
High school coach, Bum Phillips. College coach, Bear Bryant. So, Leon Fuller, nice man, dead at the age of 87. I hadn't seen Leon in a few years. He lived here in Austin. Had not seen him in a while, but part of that old guard at University of Texas. He and Jeff were close friends, but a really, really good guy. Tom Brady back in the news today, ladies and gentlemen. Tom Brady wants at least one match in the WWE to showcase his athletic ability. He says, make it happen. He recently sat down for a conversation with WWE superstar Cody Rhodes on the What Do You Want to Talk About podcast. Brady, who's now 48, revealed that he wants to lace up the professional wrestling boots now that he's retired. His football cleats, quoting now, I need to get an invite. I've been waiting for WWE President Nick Khan to come up with some storyline for me to get in the mix. I feel like I'm retired from football and I have an opportunity to go out there to showcase that I'm still a little bit of an athlete. Is he gone crazy?
I'm curious as to what Fox thinks about all his secondary endeavors.
Yeah.
They're paying him so much money.
17 he's a part million owner, a year. He's a it's 37 part, million, whatever
something,
it is.
Whatever it is. But he's a part owner of the Raiders, and now he wants to get into WWE.
Well,
I don't know if Fox is like, hey, dude, we're paying you right now. Can you just like lay off the side jobs for a little while? Like it's very interesting because I mean it's the guy we want your focus, especially during football season. We want your focus on these games that you're calling.
What's going on with him? You think?
I think he's just bored.
I think he may.
He's such a competitive. There's a reason why he retired and came back. I mean, you sit there and you stand up and you watch the games. You just want to be back on the field, right? I mean,
you can play so much golf.
Yeah.
And. Yeah, you can do that.
In casual golf, there's not that intensity that he likes.
No.
It fuels him.
He got no wife anymore. Giselle left with a yogurt,
I'm sure he has no problem with the ladies, but...
I know, but I just...
Not back at home.
Weird.
Yeah.
Just weird.
It is very interesting. There's guys like John Cena and The Undertaker and people like that that have been able to be WWE stars into their 50s, but Tom Brady, he's never even touched the surface, and him trying to become a WWE star in his 40s is—it's just not something that I don't think he could do.
The next time I watch the WWE, maybe the first time in a long, long time.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Same.
Before we go to break, we're going to talk with Scotty Sayers, my co-host on the 15 Club Golf Show about the British Open and some special guests on our show. The NFL, this is a weird story. The NFL has suspended Cardinals executive Ryan Gold indefinitely for violating the league's gambling policy. The suspension is effective immediately. The NFL's investigation determined that Gold provided inside information regarding the Cardinals' draft selections before the picks were announced. He also participated in parlay bets on NFL and college football. Quoting now, the gambling policy, which is annually reviewed with NFL personnel, strictly prohibits anyone in the NFL from participating in or facilitating any form of sports gambling and from providing third parties non-public information. It's unclear how the NFL knew to begin investigating Gold. Gold was in his 13th season with the Cardinals, having been promoted to director of college scouting last season. He spent the previous 3 years as assistant director of college scouting after 4 seasons as a college scouting coordinator. He's appealed the suspension. Good Lord.
Well, it's interesting. That wouldn't you think that maybe they could do the same thing to Vrabel?
Help me out with
that. For giving away some inside information about trades to Rossini?
Oh, the Vrabel deal. That's a different deal.
But it's still insider information, right?
They might have. It was insider confidential information, but this wasn't to a gambling concern. His girlfriend was the media concern. That may be the difference there, but... The guy's making parlays on NFL games and on college football. If you've got information on the NFL, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. And giving information on the draft on some of these betting sites, this is like President Trump's operator of the teleprompter. We learned that yesterday. This guy who does the teleprompter was making bets on Kalshi about what he was going to say, how many times he'd say a phrase. And he's putting it on the screen for the president. But another thing in that, I think we talked about it yesterday, we sure did on the AM side, he would go back to Kalshi and change the bet or make a different bet when he knew the president was on one of his, you know, just talking off the
little tirade
or speaking off the cuff. Good. And that guy's been indefinitely suspended. That guy should be fired. Yeah. This guy should not be indefinitely suspended. He should be fired. You can't do that. If you are lucky enough to get a job in the National Friggin' Football League, you don't do anything associated with gambling.
Exactly.
Crazy, man. Okay. More 1027 ESPN.
Jeff Ward and Ed Clements. Afternoons 4 to 6 on 1027 ESPN.
You got me.
The galaxy is safe once again.
Sometimes kids play with pretend guns. It's up to us to make sure they don't play with real ones. Keep yours stored locked and unloaded. Learn more at nfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by N Family Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Jeff and Ed Show on 1027 ESPN.
Hey, we're back on the show. I'm Ed Clements with Kyle Owen. Here on this Friday afternoon. Jeff's going to be back Monday, maybe, we hope. Think he'll be back Monday. Glad you're with us on this Friday afternoon. Hope everybody has a great weekend. I always have a great weekend because I get to spend it with my great friends, Scotty Sayers and Mark Brooks and my son Ben Clements and Kyle Owen on our Sports Saturday show on our sister station, KOBJ. Starts at 5 o'clock from Dirty Martin's. Come and see us. We'll be I guess we'll watch the third place game in the World Cup and aftermath of the third round of the British Open that concluded today. Also, a special guest tomorrow. I saw the TV show Hawk last night, the Will Ferrell show, Kyle. We talked about it on the air yesterday, and I had questions about it. It got terrible. What did you say? The Rotten Tomatoes was really in the tankerooski?
Yeah, I think Trey said it was like in the teens.
Yeah. So. Listen. I watched 4 episodes last night, and I liked it. I really, really liked it. And tomorrow on the show, we're going to have one of the stars on at 5:30, Luke Wilson. Luke Wilson will be with us on the 15th Club Golf Show. And Scotty Sayers is joining us now. Scotty, good work getting Luke to be on the show. It's a golf show. In the 4th episode where I am, I don't know how deep you are in this deal. He hasn't swung a club, but... I've had the opportunity to play golf with you and Luke, and he's a dang good golfer. Welcome to our show here on ESPN.
Thanks, Ed. And hello, Kyle. We'll see you tomorrow or hear you tomorrow. Listen, I've watched 6 episodes of The Hawk, and Luke's character, Golden Fisk, is perfect for him. And it's a good segue. You know, you can stream every one of them. You can watch them all at once. And you can binge as opposed to Stick, his brother's series, which they just release 1 a week when it's in season.
Yeah, I've got I've got a big night of TV tonight. I've got Cape Fear, and I want to watch some more of The Hawk.
Oh,
Cape Fear. That's scary. That's scary.
Good luck to you with that.
Now, Luke's going to be on at 5:30 tomorrow. Is that right?
Yeah, he's going to be on at 5:30, and he's a new dad, as reported by the London Daily Mail, and enjoying fatherhood and staying busy. He's very, very busy. So we'll have some good questions for him. And as you know, Luke played in the Dunhill Cup for many years, so he knows a little bit about British and English golf.
Speaking of English golf, day 2 completed a few hours ago. It was a long day, especially for American Bryson DeChambeau. When the dust was settled today, Lucas Herbert of Australia is the leader. He shot a 62 today, as did Sam Burns. Lucas Herbert has a 2-shot lead over Ole Miss golfer Jackson Suber, 2-shot lead over Cam Young and Ryan Gerard, who I've never heard of. Sam Burns is at -5 along with Bryson. Siwoo Kim is at -5, and a whole host of golfers, including Scottie Scheffler, Alex Fitzpatrick, Robert McIntyre, Francesco Molinari, Tommy Fleetwood. They're all at -4. The story has been, though, Bryson DeChambeau. Bryson DeChambeau, after the round, was told by officials from the RNA, "We believe you have a rules violation." And on number 5, he was walking to his ball. They got the ball identified as his ball, and apparently he damaged some grass around his ball before the shot, thus creating a better lie. And they gave him a 2-shot penalty. Instead of being -7, 1-shot out, he's at -5. Scotty, we had Mark Brooks on the show earlier. Mark agreed with the decision. I didn't after I watched it the first time, but I think Mark had some good points. Your thoughts on what happened to Bryson DeChambeau?
Well, I watched it as well, Ed. And look, he took a long time trying to figure out what angle he was going to hit that shot. And he walked around behind the ball. He took practice swings. And I don't think there's any doubt, I'm with Mark, that he inadvertently, not on purpose, may have improved his lie or the path of his swing. He walked around behind the ball. Bryson argued that he was at a different angle where he was hitting the shot than where he walked or where he took his practice swing. But if you watch that replay, I don't think the RNA had much choice but to give him the penalty. I think he's a little bit lucky in that they didn't call it while he was on the course. They wanted to review the tape, and they wanted to talk to him about it and get his side of the argument. Can you imagine if they had assessed that penalty during the round? I don't think Bryson would have finished the way he did.
He might have jumped somebody. He might have got so mad. It was just it. And he was very animated. When they went back out to the scene of the incident, they walked back out there. And, I'm glad they didn't do that either. And this would be really, it's big, but it's not really, really, really big if this happened in round 3 or round 4. Needless to say.
Well, I mean, it's hard to say how this is going to affect him going into tomorrow. And, you know, if he shoots a bad round, well, they're going to blame it on his mental state because of the penalty. If he loses by 1 or 2, good gosh, we hope that doesn't happen, because then you'll have controversy for the next month over the 2-shot penalty. But I tend to agree with it. I know Bryson didn't mean to do it, but he did. And so those are the rules of golf, and it'll be an argument for, I'm sure, for the media, certainly for the next 12 hours.
Lucas Herbert is the leader. He's the little-known pro from Australia. He's very good internationally. He played here in Austin at the Dell Technologies Match Play, a very, very bad dresser from the LIV Tour. Jackson said he got the. Did you see that outfit he's wearing today? Had on his head, yeah. Ripper. and he had one of the whatever team he plays for the Live. He's at -8. Jackson Suber, amazing story. His first major, the Ole Miss kid, is at -6. Ryan Gerard, who I really don't anything about, he's an American at -6. But the guy,
hold the phone, Ryan Gerard.
I don't remember. Help me about him. Help me.
He's pretty high on the order of merit last year. He's won on the DP Tour more than once. I don't know how many times, but a few times. He nearly made their Ryder Cup team, Ed, at Bethpage. He and Ryan Fox, who also made the cut and is at 2 under, are excellent DP Tour players.
Okay, all right.
And I actually have Ryan Gerard in a pool.
Wow.
And it's got me at the top of the pool. But, you know, we followed those scores of all the tours on the 15th club, and I've seen Ryan Gerard's name quite a lot.
So, well, the guy that's sneaky good, who's two back, is Cameron Young. He's got street cred, and I think he's going to make some noise this weekend. And we talked about Bryson and Siwoo Kim at -5. Ironically, in looking at the betting figures, you know who the favorite is right now to win this thing?
Scottie Scheffler.
Scottie Scheffler. Scottie's at +550, and Cam Young is at +700. So,
well, I'd put Sam Burns in a good spot right now. I mean, he's off that disappointing second place finish at Shinnecock, which I mean, he was an inch from being in a playoff with that putt on the 18th green, and had a great round today. Whether he can follow that up with another low round, that's awfully hard to do. But Sam Burns has got to be considered in the mix.
Yeah, this is solid because Bobby McIntyre, the young Scotsman, is at -4. Up and coming Fitzpatrick, 4. Former winner of the Open, Francesco Molinari, is at -4. Then comes Tommy Fleetwood and John Rahm at -4 today. And it would be so much fun to see Fleetwood on the course he used to sneak on at Birkdale to be in the mix over the weekend. Pearson Cootie, who we know from UT Golf and John Fields and John Paul Hebert, is playing one of his first ever Open, and he shot 70 today, and he is at 3 under par. Nice to see Pearson Cootie in the mix in this tournament.
Yeah, he's been playing. He's played pretty well. He played well up until the Masters and just actually missed by one slot on the world rankings of getting into the Masters. He was 51st when they, you know, shuffled the deck. And Pearson's playing well. He bogeyed the last two holes today, which is unfortunate. And back to Scottie Scheffler, I hope he's playing with Tommy Fleetwood tomorrow. I haven't seen the pairings. But Tommy and Scotty are both playing very well. Scotty cannot buy a putt. He's only missed 3 fairways, which is unheard of in 2 rounds at Birkdale. And he hit, I think he hit all but 2 greens today, and he just didn't get a whole lot out of the round. So that's why his odds are good, because he's playing well. He has a good strategy in the way he's attacking that course. And you just got to figure sooner or later some of these putts are going to go in.
Yeah, you got to believe that. The guy who's going to make a big move, in my opinion, tomorrow is Rory McIlroy. He fought back with a 67 today, 3 under. He's at 1 under par. And tomorrow, they call it moving day on tour. And he's really got to move on up to the east side. He's got to move up tomorrow to have a chance on Sunday.
Well, he does. And he's trying to, a little like Bryson, Rory drives the ball so far. He's at times trying to overpower the course. I know he got hung up in a couple of bunkers today off the tee, which set him back, you know, with some bogeys or missed birdie opportunities on par fives. But Rory's capable of shooting 6 under for the last 2 days of the tournament. You know, he could go low 2 days in a row and win this thing.
I hate to bring it up, but our friend Jordan Spieth had a tough day today, 7 over 77. He misses the cut, and we go another year of majors without Jordan winning one. I made a comment earlier. Your great friend and my friend Ben Crenshaw took his 11 years between 84 and 95 when he won his second Masters. So it's been a while since Jordan. But, man, after the start Jordan had, I never saw this coming. And there's a lot of things. He's a dad now, family, a lot of things going on in his world. I like Jordan Spieth so much. It just pains me to see him struggle out there on the PGA Tour.
You know what the most painful part was, Ed, is that Jordan and Justin Rose got made honorary members of Birkdale this week, and lo and behold, both of them missed the cut. Mm. I know that may have put a little added pressure on them. I know Justin Rose has a great history at Birkdale and really wanted to make the cut and play well, and he missed. That was my pick. He missed by two strokes.
No, my pick and, missed the cut, too. Fitzpatrick, Matty Fitzpatrick, he missed the cut as well. His brother, brother's playing lights out. I want to ask you, you were at the British Open a lot with Ben Crenshaw as a manager and agent. What was your favorite British Open memory? Ben came close a lot. He came close to winning an Open. What was your favorite memory over there?
Well, actually being there, I mean, Ben came close. He finished second in 78, second in 79, third in 80. He had a really good run there for a while. I went to St. Andrews twice, and the year that John Daly won and Mark Brooks only finished one shot back at St. Andrews in 95, Ben played with John Daly the first 2 days, and Ben actually led the tournament the first day. And then, and John Daly was hitting it all over the place, getting it out of the gorse, getting it up and down from everywhere, making putts. And then they played together the third day, and Daly started to sort of distance himself, at least from Ben. But it was fun watching that and being sort of a part of history as John Daly ended up winning. And I don't think there's anything like a British Open at St. Andrews. I went to a couple of those, but also went to Birkdale. That was Ben's last British Open in 1998. And it was wet and soggy, and the rough was hard to get out of. You had to play strategically around that course, as opposed to the way it's playing this week.
Boy, you drive by Muni, it looks like Augusta National. You drive by Hancock, it looks like Pebble Beach. It's so green in Austin, unlike it is at Birkdale.
I know, and the ground temperature is low, and so it's fun to get out and play right now. You're not burning up like we usually are in July. So, yeah, it's fun to play golf here in Central Texas right now.
One of your missions in life, in my life, and Ben Crenshaw and thousands of others, is to save Lyons Municipal Golf Course. And coming up in September, the Thursday before the Ohio State game, a big gathering at the Moody Center. Tell everybody how that's shaping up, because it's going to be the start of a great weekend in Austin with the Ohio State game, but raising money to save Muni on that Thursday night.
Yeah, we thought if people were ready to get ready for the weekend, this was a good launch. And if you got out-of-town friends coming in, tickets for Thursday night, the Imagine Muni Gala, you can get them at SaveMuni.com. But we're going to have Tanya Tucker. We're going to have Ray Benson along with the Copa Kings. He's going to have a horn section and play songs from his new album, which you won't believe. He sings My Kind of Town, and That's Life. And so get ready for something a little different from Ray. Also, Jack Ingram from the MJM, our good friend who supports Muni, and Wade Bowen. So, and you'll be the MC, and Mac Brown has said he's coming. The place will be full of celebrities.
It's gonna be
and
fun.
Just a fun night, and we're going to have a dance floor set up, too. So
fantastic. Fantastic. Okay. See you tomorrow at the 15th Club and Sports Saturday. We'll be at Dernie Martin's 5 to 7. Ben Clements, Ed Clements, Scotty Sayers, and Mark Brooks. A lot of British Open talk, and I know we'll talk a lot of football in general, a big week of sports news, and as we look forward, gosh, I call it sort of the end of golf because this is the final major, pains you to think that, but college football is right around the corner.
Yeah, and I guess we'll have the World Cup on, but I'm so sad that England let that game sneak away at the end.
They did. Three Lions went down, and don't forget Luke Wilson. Of the new movie, a new series on Netflix with Will Ferrell. Hawk will be with us at 5:30 on the phone. He's not going to be there in person. He'll be on the phone. He's all around the world promoting this series. So, Scotty, thanks for the visit. We'll see you tomorrow at Dirty Martin's place.
All right, Ed, take care. We'll get the chicken fingers and the Tito's ready.
Okay, my kind of Saturday. Scotty Sayers of the 15th Club and the End Zone Club and Sports Saturday on KLBJ. Again, Lucas Herbert, leader at the British Open, the final major of the year, two-shot lead over Jackson Suber and Cam Young, Ryan Gerard at minus six. Sam Burns, Bryson DeChambeau, and Siwoo Kim from the Good Korea are all at minus five, but don't look now. Scotty Scheffler, the Longhorn, is at minus four after shooting his second consecutive 68, and he's a favorite to win the Open, even though he's four off the pace right now. Back with some final comments with Kyle after this on 1027 ESPN.
Jeff Ward and Ed Clements, afternoons 4 to 6 on 1027 ESPN.
How do airplanes fly? What's in this box? What does this thing do?
Kids are curious about everything, including guns. Learn how to store your gun securely and make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by End Family Fire, Brady, and the Ad Council.
Check out the podcast page at 1027ESPN.com. Now back to the Jeff and Ed Show.
Hey, have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy everything outdoors. See you at Dirty Martin's tomorrow at 5 o'clock for Sports Saturday on KLBJ. For Kyle, I'm Ed. See you next week here on 1027 ESPN.
Jeff Ward and Ed Clements, afternoons 4 to 6 on 1027 ESPN.